Betsy DeVos has been a fairly private figure, and questions about what make her tick remain throughout her tenure as Secretary of Education. Why would someone who does not really relish the limelight take such a public-facing job? Here to help us better understand is Greg McNeely. He's worked with Betsy DeVos in several capacities over the years, including as her confirmation manager after she was nominated by President Trump. Greg McNeely, welcome to Stateside.
Happy to be here.
How did Betsy DeVos become interested in education issues to begin with?
Betsy has always been a lifelong learner herself, and her mother was a public school teacher. So I think it's always been a part of the sort of the fabric of her environment. But the issue that has really animated or motivated her has been education choice or school choice. And that occurred when she started having kids of her own that would go to schools. And she started noticing that the choices she was able to make were different than maybe her neighbors could make. And that sort of, you know, led to the series of questions anybody would have. And what drives this? And it's a pretty short distance to the answer that it's public policy.
She then takes this high scrutiny, low pay cabinet position. Why did she decide to say yes to the cabinet job?
It's a great question, and one that surprised many, because at the 2016 Republican National Convention in Cleveland, she did not endorse Donald Trump. She was a John Kasich delegate and did not vote for Donald Trump at the convention. She was offered the position because she became to the president's attention as an advocate for school choice. And when he offered it to her, I think she had some reluctance because of what the country had experienced to that point with the president, the campaign, but then was struck by the opportunity to really make a difference. If you want a platform, being a cabinet secretary is certainly something that provides you a bit of a microphone. And she received a lot of advice from people that she respected, governors, former governors, U.S. senators, that were like, you know, this is an opportunity. You can really, really advance an issue as well as fix a department that has a lot of issues and struggles. And so I think it was a bit of a wrestle, but she decided to do it. I don't think she fully comprehended the scrutiny part of which rapidly or very quickly became apparent.
What do you know about why this week was the breaking point for Betsy DeVos with the Trump administration?
Well, and let me be clear, I do not, and nor have I ever been a spokesperson for the Department of Education or for Betsy DeVos as Education Secretary, and I'm not now speaking on her behalf, but in reading her letter of resignation, it's very clear that this was an issue that was sort of a final straw. And if you go back through her tenure, you'll see that she publicly had some disagreements with him. She disagreed, for instance, the way some of the language he would use, and admonished him publicly for it, thought some of his foul language was inappropriate for a president who is often watched by school children. She had a difference of agreement with him over a budget proposal he had with special education. So she was not unaccustomed to having conflicts with him. But when you're in a cabinet, you work for the president. Just like any person who has an employer, it's part of your job. You don't always agree with everything. But what we witnessed this week was somebody that had created an environment that now has a body count, very tragically. And that environment was the telling of a fiction and a fantasy that gave people a wrong set of assumptions, using militaristic language to incite them, to fuel them. It's akin to somebody that would gather a bunch of dry tinling, pour gasoline on it, and set a box of matches out. Now, they don't strike the match, but they clearly have moral culpability. And no doubt in reading the secretary's letter that was weighing heavily upon her mind. And, you know, if you look at the timing of the letter and when she made her choice, it looks to me like the cabinet had concluded that they weren't going to make any substantial changes. And so I think that was the only option she saw.
I have to note that in stepping down Betsy DeVos would not be taking part in any cabinet action to invoke the 25th Amendment. Just to push back a little bit, there is one other option that they have to try to remove the president from office.
Well, just to clarify that, though, at 4 o'clock yesterday, a news outlet broke a news story that has since been robustly confirmed in that the vice president has taken the 25th Amendment off the table. You cannot do the 25th Amendment option without a vice president willing to serve in that role.
So you think that might have been a factor that she at least was aware of?
I can only look at the chronology in the timing and say that that seems to be a logical conclusion.
Back in December, Betsy DeVos was in a meeting with Department of Ed employees in which she talked about what was going to happen in the coming months as Joe Biden takes office as president. And she said, be the resistance. She was talking to her employees, be the resistance against forces that will derail you from doing what's right for students. In everything you do, please put students first, always. And it kind of took some people aback. What do you think she meant by that? What do you think she's worried about?
And thank you for asking that question and reading the full quote, because many outlets chose to reframe that and write a headline that said that Betsy DeVos said to resist the Biden administration. That's not what that quote says. That quote very clearly says and is encouraging the department to do what's in the best interest of students. I think her comment, that quote you just read, should be something that there ought to be almost universal bipartisan agreement about. That education ought to be primarily and mostly about the person that's supposed to benefit, the student. I think that there is a difference in those who are practitioners in the education system, the professional adults, the hardworking teachers out there who have given their life of service and dedication to help students, that sometimes what's best for the teacher is not best for the student. And what's best for the student sometimes may not be best for the teacher. And where in that conflict arises, I believe that Betsy believes, and I personally know that I believe, it's always right to do what's in the best interest of the children.
Over the years, Betsy DeVos has faced some criticism about, having a patrician background and the perception that she's removed from the lives of average Americans. Do you think she could have done a different job of communicating with people about who she is and what she was trying to do?
I do. I absolutely do. How effective it would have been probably is a robust question for public relations specialists to debate, because it is who she is. It's not her whole story. I mean, she was born and raised in a 900 square foot house. And so she has a very diverse background, but it is who she is. And but could she have done more in that regard? I think so, and I do believe it would have been potentially helpful in allowing more people to hear her. We do have a crisis of class consciousness in this country, where it's a bit of us versus them, and you get a lot of assumptions and biases and prejudice that creep into people's perceptions when they hear people from a different class having a conversation. That's unfortunate. And one of the ways to break that down is literally by breaking bread with people of all sorts of diverse backgrounds. But could she have done more as a secretary to maybe breach that divide? I think so. I don't know how effective it would have been, but I think more effort could have been helpful.
Greg McNeely, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure.